When did the vertical blank period start for me? I wonder this sometimes. The golden age of video games was not just about games, really, but about a cultural shift away from the pure physical into the digital world. For me, I think it started in earnest at the grocery store.
Into the vertical blank, generation Atari.
See, throughout the 70s and early 80s, our house existed on the kind of gender divide that had been commonplace for centuries. My dad worked full-time as a draftsman for an aerospace company, and my mom worked full-time as a housewife, with a part-time job as a teacher's aide. Nowhere was this more apparent than in our end-of-the-week ritual. In the late afternoon, my dad would arrive home from work with his weekly paycheck, cashed, and ready for the weekend. He would lay the crisp $20 bills on his bed, one by one, dividing up what my mom would get for the house and what he would sock away for whatever it was that he was socking away money for that month. Be it a motocross bike, Civil War memorabilia, metal detectors, or whatever. The most momentous portion of this ritual was the final act. My dad kept 8 $1 bills separated from the rest. If we had earned it for that week, or rather not lost it, he would dole out these bills evenly as weekly allowance for each of his 4 kids. With the house money firmly in place, in her well-loved red pleather purse, my mom, my brother, and I would head out in our sea-blue 1976 Datsun 710 station wagon with the primered left back end from the accident in 1978 and begin the weekly shopping sojourn to the Lucky supermarket. Even though this had an air of the ordinary, my brother and I were always genuinely excited about the trip. The dollar bills burning holes in our OP Velcro Ripper Wallace would soon be put to good use. Mad Magazine, 8-cent Shasta Cola, Domino's, Plastic Army Men, Twinkies, Topps Trading Cards, or whatever other contraband we could afford. These things would get us through the weekend of broadcast TV and lamenting about the seeming impossibility of getting Atari VCS for Christmas that year. On one particular Friday night in the autumn of 1981, after we helped our mom select stuff like individually wrapped cheese balls, peanut butter Captain Crunch, and Fresca, my brother and I snuck to the magazine rack to try the Mad Fold-In and see if the current issue was worth buying. On that night in particular, before my eyes could reach the cover of Mad, they fixed on something totally unexpected. Sitting right next to the new issue of Games Magazine was a new magazine that I had never seen before, with the intriguing name Electronic Games and the subtitle Video Games, Computer Games, Standalone Games, Arcades. I quickly grabbed the magazine and started paging through it, which is not my usual course of action. It was common knowledge then that browsing the magazine rack was a bit of a sordid endeavor, usually save for homeless people or dudes trying to sneak a look at Playboy or Penthouse. However, the appearance of Electronic Games changed all the rules for me. I opened the magazine immediately to an advertisement for Activision Tennis. This seemingly innocuous event had a fairly huge impact on me at the time. The name Atari, synonymous with video games in my head for several years, now made room for Activision. I had no clue what the size of either company was, and it did not matter. In an instant, the size and scope of the virtual video game world expanded twofold. At the same time, the game Tennis looked amazing. Gone were the simple rectangles and squares on a flat screen to simulate sports in an Atari VCS game like in Pong or Video Olympics. Here was a game that fully realized 3D characters and a 3D tennis court. I scanned a few more random pages, and my cognition of the virtual world of video games multiplied each time. Each advertisement made a strong and lasting impression on me. George Plimpton, showing Major League Baseball for the Intellivision Intelligent Television from Mattel, the company located down the street from me in Hawthorne, California, who created one of my first loves in my kid life, Hot Wheels. A pencil-drawn Godzilla advertising Crush, Crumble, and Chomp from a company with a name that implied massive scope, Epics. A game named Quest for the Rings for the Odyssey 2 that looked like a combination of a board game and a computer game with illustrations that reminded me of the Ralph Bakshi cartoon version of The Hobbit, a fantasy realm of unthinkable size and scope. It was almost too much to handle. I felt my breath get short, my heart quickening, and the overwhelming sense that I'd been missing something.
We
where had all this come from? Where was I? Like many other times to follow in my life, I felt suddenly out of touch. I played Atari at my friend Carrie's house years ago. I played it in FedMart and Target. I played Asteroids, Missile Command, Space Invaders, Pac-Man at Castle Park, Safeway, and Straw Hat Pizza. I knew the Intellivision existed because my friend Eric had one. I knew you could play games and program on an Apple IIe because Eric had one of those too. I knew you could get an IBM PC to play games like Olympic Decathlon because my friend Wesley had one of those. He also had a Fairchild Channel F with those weird pump light controllers. I also knew Atari computers existed, and I knew I wanted one, and that Asteroids was coming out for the Atari VCS, and I needed to get a VCS for that Christmas. I thought I had a handle on the world of video games, but I was so wrong. A nearly 100-page magazine filled with news and reviews about video games was another thing entirely. It was overwhelming. I thought I was as up to date on my video game knowledge as any 11-year-old could possibly be in 1981. Yet here in my hands with evidence that I was totally out of touch. It was a feeling that followed me my entire life. I think author Kevin Savitz put it to words the best when he coined the phrase terrible nerd. To me, it's a feeling that even in the area of things that we are intensely geeky, we still don't live up to our full potential. Whenever I think I have something totally covered, someone else comes around who proves to me that I'm merely a rank amateur. The arrival of Electronic Games Magazine proved this to me for the first time in my life, but it definitely would not be the last. Yes, video game knowledge was hard to come by in 1981. None of this appeared in the pages of Boys Life or AYSO Soccer Now, the only other magazines I read on a regular basis. I seem to recall an ad for video games in Games Magazine, but that was about it. Cognizant that paging through a magazine at Lucky Supermarket was a frowned upon activity, I closed it and took another look at the cover. Electronic Game. The name held so much promise. The word games. When you're 11 years old, is there a better word in the English language? Electronic. The word seems so space-age and so advanced. For years, my brother and I tried to make our own games to fill the void of not having our own Atari VCS. We tried everything from makeshift games on an Etch-a-Sketch to making rudimentary pinball games from spare rubber bands and light bulbs and motors in the garage. But our actual ownership of electronics had been quite minimal, which made the title all the more alluring. We did have a few games that were electronic, I guess. Mattel handheld football, basketball, and baseball, but they were very limited in scope. Some blinking red LEDs, beeps, and colorful buttons, but most of the time played out in your mind as opposed to in your hands. Our only previous personal ownership scrape with actual video games came when my dad bought us a heavily discounted Tandy video scoreboard Pong unit for our previous birthday. But the less said about that, the better. There was no color, and the sound came out of the unit as opposed to the TV. Even in 1981, it felt ancient. We hid it under the TV when our friends came over. It also broke down after just a few uses. The video signal warping every time we tried to turn on the power. By contrast, nothing about Electronic Games Magazine appeared this limited in scope, ancient, or broken in any way. It felt wide open and huge, like a kingdom of vast riches laid before us. At that historic moment, in the magazine section of Lucky Supermarket, next to the party favors and greeting cards, across from the vegetable sprayer, all I cared about was the fact that I was holding the future in my very hands. I kept looking at the cover, thirsting for more and more. I knew that at any given moment, my mom would call us to leave the store, and we'd have to leave the magazine behind. There's no way such a practical woman, who had often eaten ketchup and salt soup as a little girl in the Great Depression, would let us waste $2.95 on a magazine about video games. Just the thought of asking her seemed silly. However, when she finally called us to the checkout line, we arrived with a copy of Electronic Games in hand. Any thoughts of sneaking it through unseen were lost when she deftly asked me to show her what was clenched in the hand hidden behind my back. Her initial reaction to the magazine was mild horror mixed with disgust, the same reaction I had received in 1978 when I suggested I buy 10 packs of 10-cent Star Wars Blue Series 1 trading cards for my brother for his birthday. Surprisingly, though, she gave in, and I've always wondered why. Until the day she died, my mom never understood the appeal of video games or computers, so it certainly was not the subject matter of the magazine. Maybe she saw an everyone understood how much it meant to us, or maybe it was something much more personal. Now that I've been a parent for 20 years, I'm aware of an obvious reality that doesn't show its face until it's too late for you to control. It's this. There is an inflection point in the life of a parent when they realize the diminishing value of trying to mold children in their own image. After you played your kids all your songs, had them watch all your movies, read them all the books you loved, introduced them to your religion, your values, and your take on the world, it's time to take a step back. You realize that pushing any further might just send them off the edge. So, for better or worse, you stop trying. I think for my mom, that might have been one of these moments. She'd done her job. We weren't bad kids. We did okay in school, rarely got in trouble, and we didn't really complain about our station in life. We just loved video games, or at least the idea of them, and they were a thing that she never needed, never wanted, or never imagined would exist. But she could not hold us back any longer. So, she relented. The magazine was allowed on the checkout conveyor belt, a moment burned into my mind that I will never forget. My brother and I split the cost of the magazine and took it home. We helped my mom bring the grocery bags in the house. Then we went to our room and dove in. I sat on the edge of my bed and my brother pushed over my shoulder so he could look as well. I turned past the first page ads, the table of contents, and fixed my eyes on these words in the editorial written by someone named Frank Laney Jr. It started like this. Did you know that you're a member of the world's fastest growing hobby group? No. As a matter of fact, I had no idea. In fact, I never felt part of anything before. Well, okay, soccer and baseball teams maybe, but they were short-lived. As soon as the season was over, so was the camaraderie. The one time we stood in line to see Darth Vader, Chewbacca, and the Stormtrooper parade through Toys R Us in September 1987, it felt a bit like camaraderie maybe, at least for a couple hours, but this seemed completely different. I continue to read. It's true. Although the first Pong machine made its debut only a decade ago, today more than 5 million Americans regularly play electronic games. The introduction of space-age electronic amusements amounts to nothing less than an entertainment revolution. A member of a revolution? I'd never thought it was possible. I watched other revolutions pass me by. TV shows kept telling me that the 60s was a counterculture revolution, but I was born too late. The punk rock my sisters were so involved in appeared to be a revolution too, but I was too young for that as well. But electronic games to me truly was revolutionary. It was the first of its kind, a monthly publication dedicated to video games and other video game phenomena. The magazine started as a series of arcade alley columns in Video Magazine in 1980, written by Bill Kunkel and Arnie Katz, and championed by Bruce Apar, editor for Video Magazine. Katz and Kunkel were friends since the early 70s, turning their passion for pro wrestling into a radio show, and then one of the first pro wrestling magazines. When that failed to catch on, they wanted to try to make a living at something fun. The seed of that idea blossomed into Arcade Alley, the success of which proved to Reese Publications, the publisher of Video Magazine, that a video game magazine might have a chance for success. Kunkel and Katz pitched the idea, and before the end of 1981, they had their first issue published. By 1982, Electronic Games became the authority on video games, and along with it, writers Arnie Katz, Bill Kunkel, and Joyce Worley became household names to video game fans in the USA. The basic design of Electronic Games magazine, editorial, news, letters, previews, reviews, strategy section, was copied by every major video game publication that followed, and the structure can still be seen today in most video and computer game magazines. In 1981, my brother and I just had that single magazine in hand, and we had no idea what the future held. We traded turns reading and looking over the other guy's shoulder for most of that weekend. Every page held a treasure trove of wonder and interest. The first image in the magazine that caught my attention was an Atari advertisement about three pages in. It showed a stack of brightly colored VCS game boxes about 3 feet high with the words Atari. There's no comparing it with any other video game. The stack of Atari games looked immense. I had played the Atari 2600 at Carrie's house, but she only had 9 games. I played at FedMart in the TV section, but they had only Combat on display. I never had any idea that there were so many games for the Atari 2600. So many, in fact, that the colored boxes could form a complete rainbow. I was blown away. Did all this stuff really exist? For me, in the pages of the first issue of Electronic Games, the hobby of video gaming was born. I mean, my brother and I were not complete virgins when it came to video games, but who knew the available information about them could fill an entire magazine? It was a whole world we'd been missing, and neither of us wanted to waste another second standing by his edge. We wanted to jump in feet first and never look back. We missed the new episodes of The Incredible Hulk and The Dukes of Hazzard that night. Friday TV just could not hold a candle to our new discovery. To be honest, TV itself would never quite hold the same fascination ever again. Well, not static, boring, non-interactive broadcast channels anyway. We drank in the full color pages, the reviews, the previews, and the articles and the advertisements of that first issue of Electronic Games. And it was at that point that the magazine became my Bible, a living document of the future held in my hands and read one page at a time. I returned to Electronic Games every month for the next 3.5 years. In its pages, my childhood obsession was documented. The ups and downs of the industry, console releases, and new game reviews. In those pages, I learned about the Atari System X, the disappointment of VCS Pac-Man, and the wonder that was the Arcadia Supercharger. I read previews for the movie Tron, salivated over the ColecoVision, and was blown completely away by the GCE Vectrex. It was also in those pages that I read about the great video game Shakeout, saw Dragon's Lair, the Laserdisc game, for the first time, and learned that home computers would be the next big thing. Then in early 1985, it all went away. The magazine stopped publishing. Atari was a shadow of its former self. Video games were heavily discounted, and most disappeared from stores entirely. And I moved on. Just about the same time, my dad took my brother and I to see the movie The Breakfast Club, and I was suddenly thrust into a teenage world of rock and roll, girls, failing academics, terrible poetry, rebellion, and serious introspection, the likes of which I would not escape for a very long time. Recently, I purchased a lot of 10 Electronic Games issues from eBay. I have digital copies socked away on my PC, but for some reason, I had the urge to hold the magazine in my hands, turn the pages, and feel the glossy paper on my fingers once again. When I opened the package, the physicalness of the magazine shocked me. Turning the pages no longer feels like a simple romp through the past. In the 35 years since I've read an issue of Electronic Games, its importance has become the stuff of legend to me. In my head, it's been vaulted to a place of grand importance, next to other glorified kid experiences like playing Atari, seeing Star Wars, and riding a skateboard for the first time. But reading the magazine now, the significance has shifted. I used to consider Electronic Games magazine a landmark for the whole world, and in some ways I still do. However, the importance that shocked me, the one that hit me as I sat on our seldom used family room couch turning the pages of those 10 magazines from eBay, that was much more personal. It became clear to me that I could only try so hard to explain and show the implications of the golden age to the generations that followed. At some point, I have to look inward. If younger generations don't get it, does it still matter? Maybe. It matters to me anyway. As I turn each page, I'm reminded of the news, products, and people that have long since passed from history. Their meaning lost in an era that was buried figuratively by time and quite literally in Alamogordo, Texas. To me, those pages are now like the pages in a photo album. Their significance changing over time as I grow and change myself and alter my perception as the years pile on. In hindsight, it was such a short time, a blip in my life, really. Why was it so important? Why do I feel drawn back to the pages of Electronic Games magazine and to journalists like Arnie Katz, Bill Kunkel, and Joyce Worley, the ones who documented the era in real time? I can't explain it exactly, but I know this for sure. Electronic Games magazine does not just live in my vertical blank. It forms the entire damn foundation of my vertical blank. Sorry for not being eloquent or wordy, because I simply can't explain it any better than that. We were children of the Silicon Revolution, an X generation conscripted to fight the console and home computer wars. A product of an analog 70s childhood, we came of digital age in the 80s, believing we could affect the world 8 bits at a time. Armed with joysticks, full-stroke keyboards, Jolt Cola, and MTV haircuts, we proceeded into the vertical blank. There, we stayed up late at night, devising incantations from D&D rulebooks and beginner's all-purpose symbolic instruction code. Video games were the match, and programming was the fuse, as the infinite possibilities of the digital world exploded into the internet age to come. We are Generation Atari.
Into the vertical blank.